Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, the official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron, your number one source for theories, news and discussion, and interviews from the books and the films like me, Rupert Grint. I play Ron Weasley in the Harry Potter films. And now your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
Welcome, it is Pottercast number 120, that's 120, and we are here again. I'm Melissa, I'm here with John and Sue, and we're in for another hour-ish, kind of, period of Potter discussion, theories, stuff.
We're still doing it.
Still doing it.
20 weeks. We still think it's fun.
Yay!
We do this every week.
So do you, apparently, because you're still listening.
Yes. Thank you so much.
So, this week we have our second edition of Bit by Bit, where we talk about another whole chapter. This is not going to be a chapter by chapter kind of thing.
No, we are not calling it that.
Well, it just fits naturally because the second chapter is very much about the articles and Dumbledore. So we couldn't really separate it out. But our Phoenix Files goes further into the Harry Potter and the Order of Phoenix movies. We hear again from our lovely ladies at Scrippy 5. We again don't have a Panic Conundrums this week. We've had some scheduling and recording difficulties, so that will wait till next week. And on that note, I think it is time, as always, to hear from our lovely friends at the Borders.
The Borders! You know, I was actually just at Borders. I bought a cookbook because I sometimes enjoy cooking. I don't always burn everything. It was a delicious book about cooking on a walk. And that's like my favorite kind of cooking.
Really?
Don't tell my Italian grandparents though, because they would prefer I would enjoy cooking soft the most, but I love cooking on stir fry. Not many Italians, I think, do that.
I'm
wrong.
I do that.
We do? Like, we saute things, but it's not like high heat. Oh my god, spicy peppers and...
Way to go.
Well, anyway, I got that Broken Borders, and I was pleased to walk in there with my 30% off coupon, but...
No, you
anyway.
Didn't. You told me today that you forgot to bring it.
Well, you... Now, how does that help anybody?
Yeah, because they'll see the woe of what happens when you forget your coupon.
Alright, fine, I lied. I forgot to bring in my coupon, and I tried to tell them. I pulled up Pottercast on my on my phone. And they're like, oh, okay, well, just this one, so they were cool about it, so it's all right.
I don't know if I believe that. I've tried that, and it didn't work, but I guess I'm not John Dawlish.
It's an international calling card, don't you know?
Well, you know, all I had to do was flash my John Dawlish smile. I said, now, which character of the Potter books are you named after, that Borders guy? No, I didn't say that.
All right. Come on.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Borders.
Haven't read Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows yet? Don't worry, Borders is here to help. Pick up your copy of this summer smash hit soon. You won't be able to hide through the spoilers forever. You can count on Borders to have it in stock and ready to take home tonight, along with the audiobook version. Even if you've read the book, the Harry Potter fun doesn't have to end yet. Visit BorderMedia.com or click on the Borders banner at the top of the Pottercast page to find out more.
I'm dang happy it doesn't have to end yet, or else I don't know what we're doing here.
That's right.
All right, Sue, what's happening this week in the world of Harry Potter news?
Well, we talked about doing Phoenix Files, and we have some more news about the Order of the Phoenix movie, which has now become the second top-grossing Harry Potter movie of the series. Wow.
Whoa. What's the first one? Let me guess. First one is Chamber of Secrets.
No.
Oh, I know. It's got to be Sorcerer's Stone.
It is.
Woo! That's interesting. Five is second to the first.
I think that first one just came out. There was so much. I just remember how exciting it was when it came out. It was just such a big, big, huge. I mean, the press splash on it was just everywhere. I remember it. It was just amazing. And it opened, I think, on Thanksgiving weekend, right? And it just made huge amounts of money. And it's
huge
still
jobs.
Yeah. But Order of the Phoenix is doing amazingly well over internationally, too. I mean, something like $933 million. I mean,
dang.
Crazy. No. I mean, come on.
That's brilliant.
You know.
That's like 400 tickets. Movies.
What?
You know, the movies are so freaking expensive these days, but I'm glad it's doing well.
Yeah.
I'm glad that Harry Potter is gobbling away all the top 10 spots on the international gross.
It is. It really is.
Harry Potter takes over the world.
Yeah. I predict that the most number one grossing Harry Potter film is the film version of Fantastical Beasts and Creatures and Where to Find Them, coming out circa 2012.
I was going to say like 2020.
No, no, they won't wait that long.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
You know, I mean, what are they going to do? Like, have it follow, like, a hippogriff around and just say he wanders around?
It'd be like a National Geographic kind of, like, Animal Planet documentary where it's like, we follow the hippogriff here in its natural habitat.
I'd love to see who they cast for Newt Scamander.
Yeah.
Yes.
It'd be awesome.
Brilliant. I'm sure it would be some, like, awesome, talented, classically trained British actor.
Well, that way we could get Stephen Fry to do that. That's what they'll finally cast him in.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Patrick Stewart has been waiting for his role.
Oh, that's true.
You remember him.
So has
Captain Picard.
That'd be awesome to have all those guys in there. It's a little naturalist. There they are. Oh, man.
You'd make it so.
Okay, there's another piece of news that Lupin, once again, David Soulis, is going to... He confirmed that he will be back as Remus Lupus for...
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. But, you know, it was really funny, though, because I don't think I've ever remember him talking about how when he said he met Jo, and he said that she was happy he was playing the part, and then she said Lupin was her favorite character.
Really?
And I don't know.
Now, I've been hearing that Jo has been saying that to every actor she meets.
You think?
So it's very insecure with these people. She needs to...
Especially when she met Tony
Maudsley. Tony Maudsley, oh my God. I talked to Tony Maudsley the weekend after the premiere, and he was telling how his conversation with Jo was pretty much, you know, how thrilled she was by his interpretation of Grop. And, you know, he couldn't have been prouder. I don't blame the guy.
Okay.
Speaking of Grop, we did have a really very good, and John, I know you like this too. I don't know if Melissa had a chance to see it, but we had another feature about the visual effects that are used in making. And they talked about Grop and how they filmed it. And actually we learned that Emma Watson was filmed like on a machine, right, John, or something?
It's similar. It's actually, it has lots of similarities to how they filmed the new King Kong movie and how they had the chick in the little hand rig. That looks pretty much like a bright green, full scale version of what Grop's or King Kong's hand would have been like, so the actress can react, you know, appropriately in proportion with what this creature's hand's gonna look like. So, you know, they have Emma in there doing her thing. And then, you know, of course they have the, you know, Mr. 3D CGI, Grop doing his thing, and they composite it together, and they said that it was a lot of painstaking compositing involved in that, so they did a really good job.
It just seems like that stuff is so meticulous and it takes forever because you have to go through each frame of the film, right? When you, or like for the colors and certain different effects, and I don't know how to do it. It's just amazing.
It's a lot of talented people and a lot of time, and thank God they're putting that kind of attention into our Potter movies, cause
well,
you couldn't make it without that movie magic, I don't think.
I don't think so. I mean, they got some amazingly talented people. They got the guy who did Gollum working on it, which mm-hmm. is just, I mean, from Gollum from The Lord of the Rings, who is, of course, one of the most amazing, I think, still.
I mean, these productions out there, they're pretty much taking, like, all-star Harlem Globetrotter-esque production crews on these things. They're pulling people from everywhere.
Sorry.
They've got, like, freaking, you know, nine... How many studios did they say they were doing just the effects alone in that article, Sue? I don't remember, but it was quite a few.
Yeah, and then they said, too, that the companies are, it was at least 9 or 10, but that are trying to to work on Half-Blood Prince.
Sure.
Which is, here are these amazing companies like Motion, Moving Picture Company, and, you know, Industrial Light Magic, which is, of course, George Lucas's company, and just these amazing companies, but they're trying to get on the film, and I just think that's amazing. No.
Totally.
I don't know. Can I ask you this? And it's kind of speculative. It's not really news. But people were asking about, well, what special effects are they going to have in Half-Blood Prince movie?
How about the in Fury?
Yeah, I would think.
That whole big scene is going to be
fire.
So awesome.
Even just the boat, you know, getting across the boat.
Yeah, that whole scene's going to be hella intense. I wouldn't be surprised if they shoot a lot of that stuff first, just so they can get that stuff to those guys.
You'll have some stuff in the memories.
Oh, true. That's true. But, you know, I was thinking, because it's always about this time now that movie, the filming has started, we always see the first pictures of Hagrid's hut. No, we haven't seen them yet.
I need to find out what they did to Hagrid's hut.
Yeah.
I want him by the end of this thing, he's going to have, you know, an outdoor shower and jacuzzi. And what else could he put in there?
I know, but I was thinking about that because that's a buckbeak, right? If they keep that part in.
Witherwings.
Well, that's right. Witherwings. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Witherwings. Hello. Yeah, it's a huge effect. And, I mean, it's not always as simple as copy and pasting from, you know, Prisoner of Azkaban hard drives over here for this. Cause they revisit all this stuff because, you know, after that many years, there's so many new ways to do all the things that they did with that stuff that they probably end up redoing a lot of it.
Speaking of Order of Phoenix, we're still on them. We owe them a congratulations are in order to all the people at Order of the Phoenix and to Mr. Dan Radcliffe and Emma Watson, who were winners at the new National Movie Awards.
Those were some cute pictures that came out of that, too.
Yeah. We have a lot of...
Ivana Lynch!
Yes! She was there! Yes.
5-inch heels. You know?
I swear to God, it's almost embarrassing how much Ivana cheerleaders we are, but...
I know.
She's a Potter fan actor in those movies, so awesome. I don't care. We're big cheerleaders, but yeah,
Emma
she looked great.
Emma looked gorgeous as well. Really starting to look real adult, classy,
yeah.
You know, superstar kind of look.
Yeah, leave Emma alone. That's what I don't like about all this stuff.
I just said to the
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to everybody else in the comments who are all like, oh, my God, what is that she's wearing? If you want to talk about celebrities like that, you got your Perez and all that other nonsense. But don't bring it here. No one wants to read that crap.
Well, I was thrilled to see. I love that group shot of the trio. And then there was Matt Lewis, who plays Neville Longbottom, and lovely Ivana Lynch, who looked great. She had this beautiful blue gown on. And Bronnie Wright was there, too. Ginny Weasley. I was like,
yeah,
was awesome. I love seeing that. Right. You know?
Can I say something controversial?
Yeah.
Oh, by all means.
And now, in the straightest possible way I can say this, I've got a lovely girlfriend. Hello, Bree. I'm sorry if I have to say, is it just me that Matthew Lewis was
looking pretty hot,
the best looking guy of that bunch?
Where did this come from? He's like badass with a stubbly chin and a leather coat. What happened?
I know. I think like, it's so funny because you got Rupert and Dan, who you know aren't bad looking guys, but then you got Matt, and you know, and then you see him in the movies, and they give him a fat suit, and they give him a goofy haircut, and I wonder how much of that is because. They don't want, you know, Neville Longbottom to be the best-looking guy of that whole, you know, sixth there.
Well, but think of what'll happen in the seventh movie when he strides forward and, like, slices a head off a snake. It's going to be...
Oh, I know.
And he just
so
looks
awesome.
Like that hero.
I wonder if they're worried about, like, the audience going, like, Harry who? Ron who? Who's this Neville guy?
I'm sorry. At the end of book seven, I sort of was like Harry who. Give me more Neville. Come on.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But, you know.
They got Matt, who's taller than them now. And...
Yeah, I know.
Oh, it's funny.
Good for him. Good for him. He's starting to look mature, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
It's
crazy.
So it reminds me of the premieres when they were all walking with, like, or some of the guys were walking with dates. And, like, who are these random girls walking with these guys?
I know.
So funny.
I know.
All of them had dates. Like, who was Jamie walking with? Jamie had a pretty
Jamie
girl with him,
date.
Too, didn't he?
Yep. Nope. Like, they all had dates. It's like, oh, wow, you're that age now. Oh,
like, grown-ups.
Wow.
What Disney Channel, you know, TV film do these girls come from? But they pull them out of somewhere. High School Musical.
You know who had a really beautiful date? Devin Murray.
Yeah.
His girlfriend's beautiful. Yes, she is.
She kept giving me the eyes, though. I said, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm in a relationship.
Uh-huh. Yeah, all gross and wet and sobby as we looked that day. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Hey, well, some girls think that's a good look, especially on this guy over here.
Okay. Well, before we turn into the Perez, let's move on.
I hate Perez.
Me too. Let's move on.
Can I mention one thing? This is one thing. I don't know if you want to talk about this now or, but Rock Chicago, baby.
I know.
I cannot wait.
WROCK in Chicago. Terminus, which is the Harry Potter conference that we're going to, which I don't understand why we haven't made a big announcement yet.
Yeah.
I think we just forgot that there's going to be a huge live podcast there. Sue is the head of house there. I think I'm doing something else there. There's a whole bunch of things.
I'm the head of something there. They just haven't informed me yet.
John is the head of...
I'm going to be ahead of something awesome this
watch. Something awesome. But they're also, you know, not only are they doing all these huge things at Terminus, but they're having a whole day of Wizard Rock. 25
so
bands, three stages. every band that you can think of, all the big guys, including the Switchblade Kittens.
I know. They were like the first ones, right?
Yeah. The first Harry Potter song and long ago. And it's like the only one they ever did.
Yeah.
But, are they going to be playing all, you know, three bands at once? How are you going to be able to distinguish the songs?
I think during the day some bands will rotate, but then the headliners at night will just be one big show, I think.
That's just so cool.
I
want to get up there with one of them.
Hmm?
I want to get up there and sing with one of them.
But you got to come do the ba-ba-ba's. You've never done them.
But
I don't know the words.
Ba-ba-ba.
Ba-ba-ba.
I'm kidding, of course.
It's so hard. If I can do it, you can do it. You know what I'm just saying?
I get stage fright, you guys.
Oh, right.
I love Alex.
Right,
that was so
hand.
Much fun. And we were standing right next to Paul from Harry and the Potters. I mean, I was like in Wizard Rock heaven.
Oh, my God.
That was like the coolest thing ever.
I don't know. You guys can ask Bree how many different lyrics I have to the get out of the bathroom. You're not the boy. You don't belong here, Moaning Myrtle song.
I love that.
I don't know what it's about that song. I sing it all the time.
Oh,
and never
know,
the same lyrics once.
They're going to be there,
you guys.
I love them.
Every time we say something about Wizard Rock, some of you guys sort of like roll your eyes. Oh, I hate Wizard Rock. We have something that's going to change your mind, and I can't say it yet.
Oh, gosh.
We'll say it soon.
It's pretty much crossed me over completely.
Has it really?
I mean, I just love that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to hear Harry Potter versions of that stuff, I hope I didn't just give it away.
Well, anyway, we have an announcement coming in the next few weeks, so keep your eyes peeled.
Can I say something, too? Melissa mentioned I was very nicely asked to be head of house, but you know who else is going to be head of house now? I'm excited to this. Brian from Draco and the Malfoys.
Is he the Slytherin guy?
Yes!
No way.
I'm so
excited. Oh, my God.
I am dying. I love
it. He's perfect. He's like your foil.
I know. Can it get any better? It's perfect. I just about died.
He's like a split personality.
I did have to turn them down.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Brian will do great in my steed.
What is this in my steed?
Here we go again. Steed.
All right. All right. Well, that's going to be a great time. That is August. August in Chicago.
August 6th in Rock, Chicago, on Terminus 2008.org. Okay.
Are we going to have a field trip to the Bean out there?
I love the Bean.
And then the lady who makes the kissy face with the water fountain.
What? Oh, that was weird.
She's freaky.
There's this fountain in the Millennium Park out in Chicago, and it's really kind of scary. All these little screens making up this one big screen of people, and then they close them out. They close their eyes, and real water shoots out their mouth.
Yeah.
It's real weird.
It's crazy. And we're going to TP Oprah's house, and it's going to be fun.
You don't TP Oprah's house. You're not going to make it out alive.
She's got no security. She's just Oprah.
Oh, my God. You're going to get us arrested if that happens. No way, John.
No,
you're forbidden.
So he's on his own. He can get himself arrested. You and I are going to go be rocking.
That's right. Woo-hoo!
All right.
Can't wait.
Well, let's rock on out to the next segment, whatever the hell it is.
Great segue, Tom. Great.
Can.
I'm the king of segues.
Can. Oh, I want to do that again. Okay.
Awesome.
In Memoriam was funny. I thought it was interesting that it went right into the mirror that Harry had gotten from Sirius, because to me, I was really disappointed that he didn't use that mirror in the fifth book in order to communicate with Sirius, and so I was like, I wonder if he's going to realize how stupid he was to not use that, but instead he just starts talking to it and says, you know, Dumbledore, and I think he sees the eye for the first time in that one, and I was really excited because I thought maybe it was Dumbledore, maybe it was his brother, and you know, I never thought it could be anybody else, but I was like, maybe Dumbledore's portrait.
I didn't like this chapter. I didn't believe it was necessary for the reader to read two long biographical pieces on a character that had died in the previous book. There was a lot to take in these pieces. Too much in my opinion, and I think the plot would have been better served if Hermione had relayed the important pieces of the articles to Harry when she met him later. I mean, after all, this is what Hermione is meant to do. It's not meant for Harry, or the reader for that matter, to read through all these long biographical pieces looking for information.
Having Alpheus Doge's obituary of Dumbledore share space in the same chapter as a sneak peek to Rita Skeeter's biography was a brilliant move on Joe's part. Despite the fact that Rita helped Harry in Book 5, any word she prints is instantly scrutinized, so we were apt to believe Doge's versions of things when in fact Skeeter gets it right.
I like seeing Harry going through his trunk and trying to figure out which items are most important to him so he can pack those and keep those with him along the way. I like seeing him reread Dumbledore's obituary, like he kept rereading the letter that Dumbledore sent him in the beginning of Half-Blood Prince, because it shows how important Dumbledore is in Harry's life even after his death, that he's trying to figure out exactly what Dumbledore was trying to tell him.
I think my favorite part of Chapter 2
was
the teacup that Harry stepped on, just because when you find out later what the teacup really kind of means. And also, just, I was intrigued with this little bit of backstory about Dumbledore that we had no idea about, we as readers had no idea about before this chapter.
Welcome back to Bit by Bit, where we go through Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows a bit at a time. And this week we're going through Chapter 2, In Memoriam, and we're going to also try and talk about the Dursley's departing. Hello, everyone. Well, we're with Melissa and John, and who else do we have here?
Our new friend.
Hello, hello. My name is Julie.
Julie, tell us about yourself.
My name is Julie. I live over in Vancouver, Canada. I'm known as Harry's Julie on the forum.
I thought it was you. I was going to ask you.
No,
I didn't call you. No, I'm serious. I heard you sing stuff.
Yeah, that's me.
You sing
that's
these
me.
Awesome films. Guys,
oh, why, thank you.
She does.
The girlfriend song.
Julie has agreed to sing.
You heard the girlfriend song?
I have the girlfriend song on my iPod.
Oh, my gosh.
She does.
Oh, my God, that's hilarious. You did that one because we're...
Yeah.
Frack from last week.
Yes.
Introduced us to that song, I think, because Frack was blasting that thing at his house.
Oh, wow.
Over and over again.
Hey, hey.
Oh, wow.
And we were commenting
cool.
on what kind of track you must have gotten to do it, because it sounds just like the recorded version.
I think Maddie might have sent it to him because Frack contacted me and said, I heard your songs. Because Maddie also has I Think We're All Dead Now, my 80s.
Yes, yeah. That's the other one.
About the Inferi. So.
You guys, we have to play these at the end. Awesome. Good. Yay!
Sorry, April Fool's.
We love them.
Yay!
So, God, they're fun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. We have to ask you the three questions we asked Frack last week, and we'll ask everybody else. Is who your favorite character is, your favorite chapter, and your favorite book.
Okay. My favorite character, without a doubt, is Snape. I definitely identify with him the most just because I can tend to be kind of crabby like he is and snarky. But underneath it all, I'm a good guy. I'm a good guy.
All right.
What was a favorite moment in the book?
Yeah.
As Half-Blood Prince is actually my favorite book of the series. It's the point when Ron has been poisoned by the wine, and it's the first time that Harry, I just love the poisoning, and it's the first time Harry really kind of reacts on his own and, you know, shoves the beezer down his throat. And I thought that was one of the most grown-up moments for him, and I loved that. That book itself is my favorite, too, so...
Cool.
And I can't remember the third question.
I think you actually hit all three of them because it was what your favorite book was.
Oh, so look at me.
My friend, so look at
I'm
you.
A multitasker.
Very efficient because we have a lot to cover today anyway. So.
Well, let's get to it. But I just want to address quickly, you said that Julie's going to sing?
Yeah, Julie said she's going to sing her entire contribution today, so
oh,
might
boy.
Take a little longer.
Okay. Julie, you don't have to. It's just the John ignore.
I think she understands me if she's already at this point
welcome
being a guest host. But anyway,
I'm trying to not be John Noe myself today. I'm doing my best to hold back so it's not too overwhelming.
There's only
my
Noe-esque so
personality.
Of us. So we are talking about, more than anything else, the first we've heard from Dumbledore, really, since he died in Half-Blood Prince there.
It's an obituary written by Alphaeus Doge.
Yes.
Who we learn as a friend of Dumbledore's that he was going to go traveling with after school.
Mm-hmm.
Which apparently is, like, tradition.
Yeah. Which I think is really cool. That, like, you know, if you were a wizard or a witch and you were in school and you graduate, which is, you know, I guess you're a high school graduating age, what would be more awesome to do than, you know, go travel when it's so easy for them to travel, just operating and everything else?
Instead of having to argue with your parents, I want to go and find myself. They just kick you out of the house.
Yeah, well, it's not a big deal.
Go and
deal.
Do it.
You don't need money to travel.
Yeah, you can operate.
Go.
Seriously. Well, but let's talk for a quick second. At first, Harry tramples over a piece of a teacup that's sitting outside his room.
Very weird. From Dudley. A gift.
A little gift. A little peace offering for 16 years of torture.
Yeah.
Some orange, nice orange pico for you. Hmm.
Who was it that was telling us that, I guess, over in England or wherever else, like if you give somebody tea, it's like a sign of, you know, not like a sign of affection, but like a sign that you care about them or something? Who was telling me? Was it Cheryl? Who was it?
No one said that.
Darn it, I swear to God, all you English people, please go ahead and email and make sure I'm not crazy.
But
I swear.
Isn't it the same thing as like offering somebody coffee or offering them?
Well, doesn't Ron say that when you offer someone tea, you comfort them? It's what my mom does, and he blushes and runs off and gets Hermione tea or something?
I guess so.
There it is. See? Look at this. That's a good example of it.
I think it's Chamber of Secrets, yeah.
This is why we have guest fans.
That's right. There you go.
We learned this chapter that Harry has not unpacked his trunk for
right.
more than 6
yeah.
years. Gross! Harry!
What a, such a boy.
Desiccated beetle eyes, he finds.
I know, but like he's got like beetle eyes and all kinds of gross things in there. I mean, that was just kind of, you know, do we need to know that? But
kind of desiccated beetle eyes. How do you desiccate a beetle eye?
And the shattering of Sirius's mirror stole the bottom of that darn thing.
Yeah, see, and I was kind of bummed when it, because I was so certain, that was one of my theories, that that handy-dandy mirror, she, you know, made a big point about that mirror. And, you know, we do kind of hear a little bit more about it, but I was so certain that Harry's going to use that thing for so many things to hear from Sirius. And
I know.
Crushed, literally, at the beginning of the book. I was like, dang. There we go. Way to go, Joe. Crush my hope.
I love it how we had a glimmer of hope for a minute to think that we actually were going to use that mirror to communicate, because friggin' Aberforth's in there.
I know.
Who looks conveniently like Dumbledore.
I convinced myself that that blue eye was Albus. Until we finally figured out that Aberforth has another, I guess, copy. I convinced myself, oh my god, we're actually going to talk to him, yeah, ooh, it's going to work. But I was wrong.
Because it's weird, the blue eye, it didn't look like an animated eye, it was just a blue eye staring at him like for a second, so it's this very kind of flat image that makes you think, maybe this is some sort of otherworldly
so creepy
thing happening. But no, it's just Aberforth.
And to me, the great joy, though, as we go along, is that, you know, Harry had just all these things just random hodgepodge thrown into this trunk, and there is that locket that is so... I mean, here's Voldemort's soul just kind of tossed in there with the beetle eyes, you know? I just thought that was cool.
I know.
You
know?
There you go. So how much
beetle worth. Eyes, stinky socks, Voldemort's soul, you know?
Wait, no, wait. What Horcrux was in there?
Well, the locket. It wasn't...
Oh, the fake one.
Yeah, it just, you know, at that point I didn't know, you know, and so I kind of just chuckled to myself. I was like, oh, look, there it is, you know.
Yeah, the fake one. It wasn't the real Voldemort soul.
No, it was the one that had the note from R.I.B. in it.
Yeah. Right, yeah. But at that point, you know, we just were really sure. So when I'm reading it, I'm like kind of chuckling to myself. I'm sorry. I'm just kind of like reliving that moment. Sorry.
Hey, did we know for sure if it was?
Yeah, we did, because he opens it at the end of book 6.
It was still funny.
Yeah. It was funny to me. I don't know. It's just one of the random thoughts you have when you're reading.
Who else's stomach plummeted when they saw that locket again? Because it just kind of brought me back to that moment when he discovers that it's not the right locket, and the moment surrounding it with Dumbledore in the tower. Oh,
yeah.
My stomach just fell to my feet again.
That was so frustrating, getting to that point in Half-Blood Prince after all that huge ordeal, that whole big adventure for a fake
locket. It was for nothing.
Oh, it's tough.
You know, we're talking about that R.I.B. thing, and you're thinking about Dumbledore, and then we go into that obituary, which was so, I think, very well written. It was very lovely, and it was kind of, I loved how he ended it. I mean, maybe I'm skipping a part ahead, but how he extended his hand to a small boy with dragon pox.
Hmm.
That made me really sad. I don't know why. I just had this image of, you know, it just never occurred to me what Dumbledore would be like when he was at school and how he would befriend those that weren't quite popular or, you know, the cool kids. And
it made me really wish that Joe would change her mind and like write some Dumbledore point of view storybooks from like early Dumbledore days.
Sort of be anticlimactic, you know.
Yeah.
It's a big story.
Not really.
Anything we can do to hold on to him.
Yeah, I'll read anything that they want us to, you know. But this article is interesting. It's what happens when people with strong standing in the community know, like Sue knows from broadcast experience, I know from print journalism experience, this is what you do. You get his friends and his and people line up to write things about them, and you do the big celebration thing. People who knew him, you sort of have these great elegies written. And as great as it is and a nice testament it is to Dumbledore, it's probably just as far on one side of the bell curve as Rita Skeeter's.
Yes.
You know, this is like the rosy view that you never speak bad of the dead, and then you exaggerate all the good stuff because that's what we do.
Yeah.
And we get over to Rita Skeeter, you know?
I was so pissed at that point.
Oh, man.
I just couldn't believe it. I could not believe what she was doing.
I have to interrupt the what John did to me on the night of reading this book.
Oh.
Yes. Okay? See what he just said, that he was mad? He comes up to me and says, what are you up to? I said, I just finished chapter one. I've just told him, I've just finished chapter one.
Numbers.
He goes, oh, yeah, that woman. I hate that woman. I can't believe she's doing that. I'm looking like, John, I just finished chapter one. Oh,
I
meant sorry.
The,
and he runs away.
Muggle studies.
No.
I hate her. She died.
Luckily, we spent the rest of the time in separate rooms. The three of us were all in different rooms, and it was better that way.
We met up again 3 minutes later, and he did it to me again. If I had read the book in the same room as him, he would have had a book-shaped imprint on his forehead.
He starts getting desperate and throwing notes under the door. Oh, my God, did you get to page 27 yet?
You know what that reminds me, you guys, is that we have a video of us giving a little testimony as we read the book.
Yeah,
we had this room set up in this house, and at any given time, any of us could run in there, hit record, and, like, react. And that's probably a tape and a half worth of talking.
It's terrible.
Wow.
We should figure out how to bribe the audience into forcing our hand to putting that online.
I never want to do it again.
What can they bring us? How many cookies? How many burritos?
I've never seen it. I don't think I want to because I remember some of the things I said. So, probably not good to see.
There's a lot of crying. There's a lot of freaking out.
When Ron left, I walked in and then I closed the door and I went, Ron just left. Not cool. And I left.
Yeah.
I was back.
Oh, Ronald.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, back in the moment.
Well, this thing about Skeeter, though, I mean, it's such a dichotomy. I just had to laugh because this is exactly how these hokey things are phrased, like the Kitty Kellys. I don't want to besmirch her.
No.
But, you know, she's this, you know, you think she's so sweet, and she writes these terrible, you know, tabloid-esque expose kind of things. And then here's this Rita Skeeter, who is much warmer and softer than her famously ferocious Quill portrait. I mean, that just made me, I was like, oh, are you kidding? You know?
Yeah.
It's so.
I gotta say, because I've written stories like this, obviously not with the ice that Rita Skeeter does, but
ouch.
I've seen, you know, you don't mean to do it like this, but it's such a fantastic parody.
Yes.
Of those profiles. They're all like that. You meet, I mean, I've never done this, thank God, but you read these stories where you meet your subject and she's sitting down looking wonderful with coffee and she's so warm, isn't she? She's offered you coffee and her house is lovely and it's all roses.
And when they describe the room like that has something to do with what you're talking about right now.
Yeah,
there's a lovely pattern of flowers on her couch, which match lovely with the hue of the wall. Okay.
Mm. It's so rampant. When I read this the week after, I went back and I looked through, like, my stories and stuff to make sure that I never wrote anything as bad as that. Thank God, at least.
Well, I'm sure Jo got a kick out of it, because I'm sure she's been subject to interviews where they don't always write the way she would prefer.
I've read some of those before.
But, you know, and then just the way, though, that they quote Rita in this, you know, darling Dodgy, you know, and just she's so, you know, that fake, you know, fake sincere, laugh it off, play it off, but she's so venomous in her things, and you're just like, oh, my God, this is perfectly written, and it is a perfect parody. You're exactly right.
She's very Umbridge-esque, really, when you think about her Rita, her personality. This is what I believe, and I'm going to show you. Trust me. When you buy my book on September 22nd, when it comes out for 24 sickles.
Yeah, it's just interesting how she admits to bribing people for stories, which is such a big fat no-no, but, you know, it's such a huge...
Is that illegal?
I don't know about illegal, but it's certainly frowned upon. You know, you don't pay fee people for their...
But, you know, I mean, Julie, what did you think? when you were reading, like, how she described, like, all these characters, like, she's describing the opposite of Dumbledore. I mean, how did you feel when you were reading, that kind of thing?
Well, Rita infuriates me greatly because she reminds me of all those gossip mongers where, no matter what the situation is, she's going to turn it into the most interesting turn that she can make it. Oh, well, you didn't hear the situation of how he got into a fight with his good friend, did you? And just no matter what it is, even though it's over defending his sister, it's going to make him look bad because, oh, no, he was so angry and he can't control himself. He fought with his best friend. No matter what, she will turn it into the best story that she can come up with, and she's just so infuriating. And that's the first thing I thought was she's just, no matter what he does, no matter how good it is that he was, what he was doing, she's going to twist it into something ugly. And I always, you kind of have to read between the lines with anything that Rita does, obviously, so.
Yeah. I hate all that gossip magazines, all those gossip websites and all those, I can't stand that crap.
Ugh, God.
Yep. Melissa and Sue just admitted recently to reading some of that garbage. Didn't
yeah,
you guys?
It's
yeah.
terrible.
It's
like,
true.
You don't believe it. Like, that's the difference between somebody who goes, oh my gosh, star A really is sleeping with star B, and somebody who, like, looks through the magazines and goes, this is just funny. You know?
Yeah.
But the ones I won't pick up, like, I'll look like People and Insta and that kind of thing, but the ones I won't pick up are, like, the ones that photograph the star's butts on the beach. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Guess who this is from behind.
Exactly. Look at the cellulite. Ah,
I know. Oh, my God, that's me.
Oh, it's the supermarket. You know, like, ugh.
You know, and that's what struck me is that Joe was making this very subtle point by the Betty Bake way. Is this the name of the reporter or whatever? It just struck me as such a, you know, one of those kind of things. And I just thought Joe was just taking it all right out, right there, just venting it all right through there.
I love it.
I was just surprised to read so much from Rita. I didn't think Rita was one of those characters like Umbridge that after the book that she was originally introduced in, I didn't expect to hear as much from her again. Like, for Umbridge to come back in the way that she did in Deathly Hallows surprised me.
Yeah.
And I figured, you know, once Hermione got her little revenge on Rita, having so much more Rita is like, what did Rita learn? Rita didn't learn anything.
But you know, it was a good way, though, don't you think, though, to kind of introduce, like,
it was perfect. I was just surprised.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Rita learned how to be a better Rita.
Yeah.
Technically, when Rita wasn't making assumptions and twisting things,
mm-hmm.
most of what she wrote was kind of true. It's a lesson of context. Everything you read gets put into a context.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody like Rita puts it into the context they want, it makes the truth sound so terrible.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. I will make this story work to however I want to, even by telling exactly what happened. I'm going to do the tapping the side of my nose and winking at you, going, see? Fights with his best friend.
Yeah, there were a couple of little things mm-hmm. that were assumptions and twists, but the mm-hmm. general gist we learn is pretty much what happened, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's cool because to get introduced to a lot of those stories and a lot of those ideas, like Dumbledore not being like this pristine, angelic-like character, hearing it from Rita makes you feel like, oh, that's bull crap, and there's no way any of that's true. And then to actually read it happening makes it that much more like of a struggle in your mind, like, oh my gosh, is this real? I mean, that final arc for Dumbledore's character development.
And then you hate Rita even more because she was kind of right.
Yeah, totally.
I like how she avoided the slash between Potter and Dumbledore when talking about the Potter-Dumbledore relationship.
Unhealthy.
Dash.
Even sinister.
Potter-dash. Dumbledore. It'd be bad if she put the slash.
Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting, too, because I thought it was, because I was waiting to hear about Snape. I mean, in the previous chapter, we had seen Snape in all his glory at Malfoy Manor at the foot of Lord Voldemort, all this, and then we find out, you know, that someone had actually said that, you know, hey, maybe he had committed murder here, and so there, I was waiting to see how Joe was going to introduce that, and that was kind of interesting, though, it came from, although she phrases it, gave test of evidence against Severus Snape, a man against whom he has a notorious grudge. I mean, come on, you know.
Yeah.
Again, twisted to sound bad, but kind of true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sadly.
I think that this is probably all we have time.
Yeah, is that as far as the chapter gets us, too?
Yeah.
I'm so stupid. I thought that the Dursleys were in this chapter, too.
I got a little worried when you wrote me back and you said the Dursleys bit in chapter 2, and I'm flipping through it going, that's not the right chapter. And I'm going to, oh my God, what am I doing?
And I'll note that
I'm going to make a fool of myself. And then I just read ahead and I said, okay, well, I'll do my best.
That's what he was talking about. I'm a moron. But yeah, since we didn't manage to get together 2 weeks in a row for Canon Conundrums because we stink at scheduling, this one will run a teeny bit longer. But anyway, this is about as much as we can do until next week's Bit by Bit, where we will talk about how we left things with the Dursleys. This that bit there, that's a lot to wrap up. Lots of loose Dursley ends that were tied in that chapter. And then the week after, we'll get the Seven Harrys and the Escape and the So Long Hedwig and Moody.
All right. Well, thank you, Julie. That was awesome.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Julie. Join us in a little bit here for the Phoenix Files.
I would hope so, yes. Please.
Out of order, am I? You believe all the rubbish he's come out with about you-know-who, do you? You reckon he's telling the truth? Then you're mad too.
Welcome to the Phoenix Files, the Phoenix Files for the week of October 4th. I don't even know what the day is today. I don't know.
Or episode 120.
I like that musical intro. That's nice.
Me too.
Yay.
You're setting a heavy precedent here, so all of our featured guests will have to open the show this week.
Bandersnatch will come on with like a full band and choreography.
Yeah. For real.
It's going to have to be. So what the heck is going on with Phoenix Files this week? What is our topic, Sue? Let us know.
Oh, when we finally, lo and behold, Ronald Weasley is actually the Ronald Weasley of canon. And what?
Hey.
What do you know? Who defunked it?
How'd that happen? Let us not be interpreted as an insult to Sir Rupert Grint.
No.
Who does a lovely job.
He does.
It's just that his character seems to have finally been written appropriately.
Can I share an embarrassing story?
Always.
What's that?
At the premiere in L.A., they invited all the fan sites to the party. And I went over to Rupert Grint, and I was talking to him for a minute, and I said, we just want to say it's so awesome. It's finally like the real Ron in the movie. And I realized what I was saying to Rupert Grint, who plays him. And it was like I was insulting him.
Like, burn.
I put my foot in my mouth, and I was like, oh, but I mean, like, because the writing, I just walked away. I just couldn't.
And then I think you ran away, didn't you? Like, you dropped your drink and, like, ran
for the door. I was like, John, what? Oh, yeah, John, I'll be right there. And I walked away.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. I felt bad for you embarrassing yourself, so I proceeded to embarrass myself in your stead by whacking him with my poster at every opportunity.
Now that's a good friend
that
right
from,
there.
From Flip the
that's
Phoenix.
That's a good friend right
steed?
There.
Yes. What, Melissa?
In my steed?
In your trusty
Do
steed.
Do I have a horse that I carry around with me?
No, don't you call steed a horse.
In my stead. In my stead.
No, in your steed.
No, it's my stead.
It's in my stead.
No, our editor's name steed. How are you? How is this the first you've heard of this podcast joke?
You've never. Trusty steed is one thing. Okay,
well,
anyway.
Anyway. Rupert doesn't enjoy being whacked by
No,
poster.
I would imagine not. Okay, Rupert in movie 5.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about first about Seamus in movie 5.
Yes.
Seamus? Listen, my grand's been saying bad things about you, Harry. Don't you have a go with my mom.
That is a horrible Irish accent. I mean,
no, it's perfect.
It's horrible. It sounds worse than my Scottish pirate.
Erg. Hey, lucky Tom.
Not again.
Is he Irish or is he Scottish?
Seamus is Irish.
Pure Irish.
Is there a difference in how they talk?
Yes. Yeah, I'm like,
I'm just teasing.
People of Scotland will rise up against you. And so when people
I would love an inbox full of voicemails from both countries.
My mom didn't want me to return. Because of you. That was terrible, too.
That's Irish.
I just love the way he was standing when he's he's being all confrontational. He's got his hands out like in the old Westerns. You can see his fingers twitching like, I'm going to go for my wand boy. Who's going to be faster, eh? Hey? Don't you have a go at my man?
It is kind of funny.
It's just funny that they're sitting there waiting for, like, it's like they knew it was going to happen. The confrontation was building. And, like, Dean's all, it's like, yeah. Summer wasn't that bad, not as bad as Seamus is.
And then everyone stops and stares and watches the scene as it happens.
It's one of those classic moments where everybody at that moment has nothing better to do than to just watch who Harry's talking to.
He's so tiny, though, that you sort of laugh and sit there going, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Really, honestly, you're so little. But then I guess they both have wands, so.
Yeah. Who's little?
Devin! He's so short.
Well, Harry isn't the tallest creature in the room either.
They were spaced pretty far apart, probably for a reason.
I think it's funny how he's best friends with Dean, who's like huge.
6'7"
the tallest person ever.
Yeah.
But I really like that whole scene, because it seemed to me, maybe I remember it wrong, but there's actually like music, like rock music playing on the radio or something. Maybe it was in a different scene later in the movie, but it just seemed more like a regular common room.
Oh, it was.
And it just seemed more like what you would expect in like high school, you know, the upper year kids, the common room to be like. And it just seemed like, okay, that they put some thought into staging that scene. And then there all of a sudden, they're just the way that Rupert turned as Ron and just like, hey.
Like, yeah, what are you going to do about it?
Oh, it was so brilliant. I loved it. It was so calm. There was no goofiness. There was no spastic Ron. It was just, does anyone else have a problem? Good.
Yeah.
We're going to go upstairs now.
Awesome.
And it was beautifully done.
And then he gets chewed out by Harry for being a good friend.
Jerkface Harry.
Not cool.
I just felt like there he was. There was Canon Ron, the one who is loyal, you know, the one who's not some goofy, you know, just sidekick last at all time. It was just, that was a true moment of friendship. And I just,
The first big show of character we've seen from him in the movie is him standing up for Harry, which is just like, God, finally, you know?
The scene is one of the only times in the film that we see the doubt that the students have of Harry over the summer and everything else. And they have, you know, you see a little more of it when they're signing up for the DA. But it wasn't anywhere near as huge a presence as, you know, it was written in the book and all the papers that were coming out. Now, everybody was following how discredited Harry and Dumbledore were. And so this was the big opportunity to do it. And I'm not dissatisfied. I think they did a pretty good job setting up that the students weren't really trusting Harry at that point.
Yeah, because they just went and spent the summer with their parents, who are, most of them, are entrenched in the wizarding world. And you know what happens with parents. They sit around, they get on the phone, you hear conversations, you hear everything gets twisted, you're reading all these articles. So it's a whole period in which nobody can ask Harry the real truth, because Harry's not around to defend himself. So it's been all sort of boiling, and you finally get to this point in the common room.
No, he wasn't writing to anybody all summer, even including Ron and Hermione. So there's no way he would have had a chance to talk about it since school let out.
What I was thinking when I rewatch that scene when Seamus stands up and he says, my mom didn't want me to come back this year because of you. You could really feel it wasn't even so much, I don't believe you. It's, you almost caused me to have to lose coming back to my school. It's your fault. All of this is your fault, because whether or not he actually believes him or not, they never actually say. It's more, my mom wasn't going to let me come back because of you. Look at the trouble you're causing. Why do you always have to do this? And you could kind of feel that frustration. Everyone's frustration is going through Seamus of, this is all happening because of you. Why are you doing this? Why are you saying these things? Why are you causing us to not be able to come back to school and all that stuff? So I could really feel that tension. All that pressure was being put on Harry of, it's your fault. This is your fault that the Dark Lord's back. And I just said the Dark Lord. Excuse me. Voldemort. Sorry, I'm a Slytherin. That was
okay.
Apologies.
That totally stings, because if there's one thing we know from Harry, how important the school is to these kids, you don't mess with the potentially taking that away from them. And you know, we know that Seamus is dad's a muggle, mom's a witch.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of a nasty surprise when he found out. So. There's already some uncertainty with going to a school for wizards here. So he's a good representative of that doubt.
How did you you feel, like, what were your thoughts of the movie so far when you started watching this? I mean, I guess we have talked about how we felt up to this point in the movie. How did you feel when you were seeing these scenes? Were you happier than, like, previous movies?
With every single one of these movies, it gets better and better. Absolutely. I, of course, did feel like it was being rushed because Order is just such a massive book. You have to do your best. But I thought that for a condensed version for a movie, they really, really did an excellent job. Even with just little quirks, little things that Harry had to do, you could see how his frustration was building and that, you know, all caps Harry was coming out. I think they did a really good job of showing, even with just the one confrontation with Seamus, of how half the kids must be feeling. And I mean, we can get into Umbridge for hours, which I'm sure you already have several times. Just the characters were developed in such a wonderful way. Back to Ron, again, finally, canon Ron. It was so beautiful, just one sentence, and it showed everything. Does anyone else have a problem with Harry? That's all he had to say.
Isn't it amazing what good script writing can do? Just saying.
And a good director. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I just thought it was neat, that scene, just to see. You know, it was the first moment we've seen the kids in the common room at that point in the film. And they're just hanging out, and the music is going. And there was a cool addition to that. It had the music going, and then later in the film have them, one of their decrees being no loud music.
Yeah.
So it's like they're getting older. They're getting more comfortable with each other.
Right. Did the music stop when the confrontation began? Was it one of those someone, oh, here they go, they're going to fight, and they turn off the music? Did anyone notice?
It was
just sort of low.
Records coming up.
sort of low, and they just sort of...
Just, okay.
A little bit further from it, you know?
Just, you know, the Williams just kind of turns down the editing of the music. Ooh.
Who was it this time? Nicholas
Cooper. Yeah.
He did good, though.
Well, what? So then they get up into Harry's dormitory, and instead of Harry turning around and saying, thank you, Ron, for standing up for me in front of those people, you're a good friend, Harry just blows up at him.
Fine, you, no one, Harry does not like people fighting his battles for him. He can't stand that.
You know something I have to say, and I'm going to admit this on Pottercast, on the air, that it took until I saw the movie again just recently for me to actually put two and two together that it wasn't just angsty Harry that was causing all the all caps issue. He was being invaded by Voldemort. So that constant underling of anger was coming from him as well, and I only just put that together. That undercurrent of anger wasn't just him being 15. That was also the constant rage that was being planted in his head, and he didn't know how to deal with it because Harry is not an angry kid. And I just figured that out.
Well, I think that, like, I mean, Jill also used it to underline her point.
Yes.
He's got a lot of anger that he needs to get out.
Yes.
There. And so she had this book of being invaded by Voldemort. Now Voldemort's gone, he can be a little less angry.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you can see both ends of that, and I think definitely if people are wondering which book to go and reread after they read Deathly Hallows is Phoenix, because the people who figured that Harry was a Horcrux, now they can go back and see, well, what did having this little tiny bit of Voldemort's soul inside of him, you know, was that having an effect on him? And some of the things that Dumbledore was saying, you know, it's like, you know, whether or not he acts upon those feelings that he has inside of him or doesn't. And and you're totally right. It's not just hormonal Harry being pissed at the world. There's could very 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 well be influence there from Voldemort.
That little devil on his shoulder actually had a part of his soul to hold on to and was just kind of working its way through Harry. And it just, you know, we've all had that time where you don't know why you're so angry, and he actually had something that was, in a small way, taking control over him because of the possession. So.
Totally.
Can I say what my one thing I actually like, and I'm just going to be open about this. I am a Rupert Grint fan, and I think that he often gets criticized a lot for his expressions of like, ugh. But I thought in that scene, you can look in his eyes and you can see the hurt, and it's in his eyes,
it's
not just an expression. And I gave him a lot of credit.
And not in a pansy way. In a teenage boy, you know.
Yeah.
Believable. Yeah.
Right.
It's like they're best friends, you know, they've known each other for for 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they had their fight back in Goblet and everything else. And
but that was Ron kind of antagonizing him. This is the first time Harry's ever lashed out at him, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, well, Harry threw a badge at his head, so.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
I think it might be the same, but it's a whole different situation. I
forgot about that, yeah.
Goblet fighting.
Boing!
Well, you know, it's Ron, and it probably, you know, if you put yourself in Ron's shoes, it probably wasn't an easy thing to stand up your whole common room and defend your friend. And you're probably feeling pretty good about that at that point. Then you go up there and you expect, you know, a little bit of, you know, thanks, Ron, that was really cool. And you get the hell out of here, Ron. You're a jackass. So totally. I'd be totally hurt if I was Ron.
I think that is all we have time for here on the Phoenix Files.
All we have time for on the Phoenix Files.
Yeah. But Julie, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yes. Awesome job.
To play
awesome
your
job,
songs.
Julie.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. I look forward to hearing the show.
Next week on Phoenix Files, we will have a continuation of the Order of the Phoenix with first classroom scene with Umbridge and Harry getting all ticked off at her, saying he was a liar.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another Scrubby Five. I'm Nina, or Severine Snape, and I'm here with my familiar co-host, Erin.
Hi, everyone.
And we have a new face, or I should say a new voice as well. We've recently hired two new editors at Scribulous, and one of them is here with us today, and her name is Linda. You can find her on the Leaky Lounge forum as Mosaic. Hi, Linda.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Linda. We're really pleased to have you on board.
Thanks. I'm so excited to be a part of Scribulous and help out with Scribby 5. It's going to be great.
Well, it's really great to have you with us. And we have another new editor. Her name is Beth. And you can find her on the Leaky Lounge as Loony Love.
I love that lounge ID.
Me too, yeah.
And we've had some other staff changes too.
Yeah, unfortunately we have. One of our more senior editors, Sloane, or Witherwings, you might remember her from the first few Scribby Fives that we did, had to leave Scribby because of her real life was getting in the way. Sloane had been with us from issue 4, and she really was one of the hardest working editors we've ever had, and she also wrote so many essays for us. And it's really hard to imagine Scribulous without her, so I just want to take this opportunity to say thank you so much, Sloane, for everything you did, and we'll really miss you dearly.
Yes, we'll miss you, Flynn. Keep in touch, and keep sending us essays.
Yes, keep sending your essays. So back to the order of the day. Erin, what are we talking about today?
Well, hopefully, by the time you hear this, Scribulous issue 19 will be available. And in this issue, we have a wonderful essay entitled Choice or Chance, The Ambiguous Ending of the Deathly Hallows by Avogadro. I'll let our new girl, Linda, do the honors of telling us what this essay is about.
Thanks, Erin. All right, guys. As we all know, J.K. Rowling has always put a lot of emphasis on the choice, the importance of choice and free will. I'm sure everyone is familiar with Dumbledore's beautiful comment to Harry in Chamber of Secrets that it is our choices rather than our abilities that show who we really are. He also urges Harry in Goblet of Fire to choose to do what is right over what is easy, just one of the many other examples of the emphasis placed on choice in the series. So for 6 books, we are led to believe that making the right choice in life will get you where you need to go. And then with the release of Deathly Hallows, Rowling goes and throws this all away when she explains in an interview that what she really wanted Harry's defeat of Voldemort, and therefore the fate of the entire wizarding world, to be determined by Harry's chance acquisition of the true ownership of the Elder Wand in a physical fight, not even a magical one, with Draco. So in his essay, Avogadro is asking if Harry's defeat of Voldemort was due to dumb chance or to the choices Harry and Voldemort had made on their way to the final confrontation.
Wow, that's one complex topic.
Yeah, it really is. I can imagine there would be evidence for both choice and chance to have played a role in the conclusion of Deathly Hallows.
Exactly, and that's the point Avogadro is making in his essay. He gives us 3 different scenarios for what really happened at the end of Deathly Hallows, one where the whole resolution is determined by chance, one where it's all about choice, and one where choice and chance work together.
Well, we won't have time to go through all three of those scenarios, but let's examine the one where he explains how it could all have been due to choices made along the way. First of all, there is Voldemort's choice to use Harry's blood to come back to life at the end of Goblet of Fire. And because of this, Harry is tethered to life and cannot be killed as long as Voldemort is alive.
So that means that it didn't matter that Voldemort did not own the Elder Wand, because even if he had gained true ownership of the Elder Wand, he could not have killed Harry with it.
But Avogadro rightfully says that we can't know this for sure. I mean, it could be that the power of the Elder Wand in the hands of its true owner is stronger than the protection in Harry's blood.
Yeah, that's true. We don't really know this, but let's look at some of the other choices that were made as well. Like, a big one is Harry's choice to voluntarily sacrifice himself and let Voldemort kill him. And why was that necessary, you think?
Harry had to sacrifice himself because that would break Voldemort's powers and protect all his opponents from him. Like, Harry was protected from Voldemort by Lily's voluntary sacrifice for him. So this again means that it would not have mattered that Voldemort did or did not have ownership of the Elder Wand. Harry's sacrifice would have broken his power anyway.
Right. So when you look at it like this, Harry was doubly protected from Voldemort. Once by his blood and Voldemort's veins, and once by his own sacrifice. In this scenario, the Elder Wand doesn't even come into play.
Yeah, but I don't understand why Voldemort's killing curse rebounded on him at the end, at the final confrontation, if it wasn't for Harry being the true owner of the Elder Wand.
Well, if we stick with the scenario where everything is determined by choice rather than chance, we can also explain this through Harry's self-sacrifice. After all, we have seen a killing curse rebound once before, and that was after Lily's sacrifice. So it is possible that Harry's sacrifice was the reason the killing curse rebounded at the end of Deathly Hallows.
Yeah, that is possible. Of course, it isn't quite as straightforward as all of that. I mean, come on, this is J.K. Rowling we're talking about. It's not that easy.
Yes, right.
There's so much more to say on this topic, and Avogadro did an amazing job in systematically analyzing all the events that occur at the end of Deathly Hallows to see which was the real deal clincher in the end, choice or chance.
Well, this topic is big enough to fill a whole canon conclusion segment with, I think, but unfortunately our 5 minutes are up. So to find out more, you'll have to read the whole essay, and I'm sure it will provoke a lot of great discussion. And if you want to comment on anything Avogadro has written or on any of our other essays, go to Scribulous Forum on the Leaky Lounge, which you can find in Cauldron's Corner, which is in Diagon Alley. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
Yep, bye.
And we're back.
We're back. Woohoo!
We are back.
Kung Fu Snape.
Oh, tell them about that. I love Kung Fu.
Oh, well, I'm sure they've already seen it here on the podcast blog, but the lovely Bree, and I don't just say lovely because she's my girlfriend.
Yes,
she's lovely
do.
To everybody.
I love her.
She edited another podcast tour blog, or vlog with a V, and it's us in Tucson, where we play with Kung Fu Snape, and we say hello to Lisa QQQ from the Quick Quotes, Kill Quote. And we do a little bit of podcasting in Tucson, and a general good time.
It was
Tucson
awesome.
Was a hilarious city. They found everything funny.
They were awesome. Yeah. That was a great show. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I released laughing gas previously into the room, so
thanks.
They sometimes have to resort to that during the live shows.
But I loved Mr. Snape. That was like my favorite thing, and I annoyed you guys the rest of the summer with that. But I love Kung Fu Snape.
Yes.
Sage Snake.
Is he the snake now?
I don't know. Well, he was.
I want that toy.
That Snape sat on the dashboard the whole time.
I just can't believe Snape, after all of his Slytherin-ness, was killed by a snake.
I know. It's so, such a cruel irony, don't you think?
Totally.
I like it.
Speaking of all kinds of action figures and all kinds of things, I want to make a quick plug for our cauldron shop. And there's all kinds of cool things. Halloween is coming up, and I'm going to urge you all to go in there and check out our freaky masks. John, I don't know if you remember, a long time ago on the news we talked about the the masks that were coming out, and that Dumbledore mask.
I never did buy that. Is it still available?
It is. It's just now available in our shop.
I'm gonna wear it to the Joe thing in LA when I go out to the crowd.
Because
I heard that they're going to be giving out a ticket that day to the person with the craziest Dawlish costume. So everybody needs to dress as Dawlish, and you might get lucky enough to be pulled into the event.
Oh.
That may or may not be true. I don't know 100%.
But dude.
But is it worth the risk to not dress like Dawlish? I don't think so.
Okay. You have fun. When is that, John? When is the LA event?
The LA event is the first of the three, mm-hmm. or the four now, and it is on the Monday, I think, October 14th. Let me just consult my Google calendar here.
15th is a Monday.
The 15th? Okay. It would be the 15th. And then on the Thursday is the 18th, and that's Joe visiting New Orleans.
And it's New Orleans.
Yes, I remember. And then Friday, the 19th, is New York City.
Yoo-hoo!
And then 20th, is it Canada now?
It's the 23rd, I think, that she's up in Toronto. Oh. I think she has a couple days off in between. Kind of rest, probably.
Right on, Joe. Where will Joe be vacationing? Tune in to the next Pottercast.
Oh,
we have no idea.
No.
Yeah, Joe's going to be the first author to go to the moon.
Oh, man. Like, what's that dude, that one rich guy that flew to the moon on those shuttle things?
Lance Bass?
No, didn't he do one of those shuttle missions where you can, like, pay $1 billion and fly?
Yeah, Lance Bass.
I don't think that Joe's...
No, Lance Bass wasn't allowed to go.
Why not? He's Lance Bass. He can do whatever he wants.
Okay. Okay. Richard
my,
Branson?
My brother-in-law has a Lance Bass bobblehead doll. I don't know why.
Why do people need those bobblehead dolls? That's just one thing I just have...
I don't see the appeal.
I don't know. I was looking through when I was updating the shop. I actually saw one that was Edgar Allan Poe and Freud. Now, why would you want that?
There are companies who will make your own bobblehead dolls that look like you. They pretty much sculpt them, but I think you need to order like 100 or something at the minimum, so I've never... about
a Dollish bobble?
That would be cool. If I had Dollish bobbleheads made up, guys, looking like me, and I just wanted the one, would 99 of you buy the rest of them so I don't have to have a 99 Dollish bobblehead?
Bobble me, Dollish. Oh, my God. I can't even do it.
That would be pretty cool.
I want Grandma Neville's, Grandma Limbottom.
No, she does not need to be...
Bam you. That would be awesome.
Celebrated. She's a cheap shot Longbottom. I don't celebrate her. She took advantage of his chivalry, helping out an old lady, and got him his back with her.
There are a couple things on this
her.
Show that we really need Joe to clear up.
Completely.
I'm going to be writing petitions in the crowd. Dollish did not
all
hit.
All right.
Oh, I can't even get that out of my head now, that little bobblehead Dollish. I want one.
Yeah, it's in trench coat.
So, John, I want it because when you make me mad while recording or something, I'm just going to sit here and bam it.
Look at, hey, everybody's beating up on Dollish. What did he do? What did he do but get outstanding on all of his notes?
But go from the wrong side. He was always on the wrong side. I mean, he tried and he just...
I don't know.
He's a company man. He's a company man. He does what he's told.
Including
beat up
guy.
On little old ladies.
Can you think of poor Dollish's family back home? Who's probably like,
John.
What happened today, Dad? And he's like, well, they tried to use me again as a punching bag and, you know, be the excuse for everything that's going wrong. And,
see, it wasn't today because today he was in the hospital after that attack.
Well, you imagine his poor family
Can
his
we
bed?
Stop talking about this?
Can you imagine? They're like, Dad, he missed dinner. What's wrong? Oh, my God. What happened, Dad?
Okay. What else is happening, guys?
Imagine how depressing that would be?
I think it's time to end the show. I'm done.
I want
to
go can like, and bubble.
Dollish's wife was all like, I made meatloaf for Dollish. It was your favorite. And you missed it.
Do you think there was a Mrs. Dollish? Whoa.
Of course he's married. He has two kids.
2.5 kids.
What's half the kid gonna do running around without only a one leg?
Well, I don't know.
I guess there's magic. Whatever happened to that dog that could walk on its two legs and didn't have front legs and they had him in a Harry Potter movie? Do you remember that? What was that guy? His name was like Trixie or something.
Maybe Dollish adopted him.
What?
That's it. He cares for animals. That's it, John. You're right.
That would certainly be up his alley, is caring for two-legged dogs.
You know, that's why he didn't fight back against Grandma Neville. Because
Neville only has half her limb?
No, she had an animal on her head, and he didn't want to hurt the vulture.
A vulture?
The vultures are not very sympathetic creatures,
okay,
like a two-legged dog.
We've gone way too far, and I'm going to leave. You guys can continue this conversation in private. But we're subjecting poor innocent people to it, and it's wrong.
Oh, is there anything else we should be doing, like giving anybody a new password to the next show?
I think.
Sure.
Let's
do
it.
That.
Okay.
All right, guys. Well, in the meantime, guys, keep twiddling those dials.
The next password will be vulture.
Keep each other safe. Keep faith.
Good night.
We've missed it.
Robbie is free.
I confess myself dead.
disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's Pottercast was produced by the Pottercast Trio and Steve Bonnet. The show was edited by Steed, Hildy, Samantha, and Liz. Thanks to our Scribby 5 team, Aaron and Nina, and thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on Pottercast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit Pottercast.com.